This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. It seems that everyone is on social media these days. Well, make that two-thirds of all American adults. That's the number who have social networking accounts on at least one of the many platforms, and they're using them in myriad ways, including making their voices heard, getting things off their chests, venting their spleens. It's proof positive that social media is singularly American, tying in, as it does, with our First Amendment right to free speech. But saying what you think on social media may not be the same as talking to your neighbor over the backyard fence, and that assumption has gotten more than a few people into some hot water. Employers have been known to take action after reading the posts of their employees when those posts don't toe the company line or put the company in a bad light. In Charlotte, just a few years ago, someone in the fire department was fired over a Facebook post considered discriminatory. As companies try to set boundaries, questions have arisen about just what speech is protected by the First Amendment and the role of that amendment in the social media age. It's a little complicated, so we've invited some legal experts to share their opinions with us this morning. John Buchan is a media law attorney with Essex Richards. He handles all aspects of representation of national and North Carolina media clients, including newspapers and radio and television stations. And it should be mentioned that John Buchan is also the chairman of the WFAE Board of Directors. So, John, it is your job on this show today to keep us out, to keep me out of trouble. Okay?
That's a pretty big order.
That's a pretty big order. Thank you. Jonathan Crotty is also with us. He's a partner at Parker Poe and represents employers in all aspects of the employment relationship from hiring to firing. You're hired.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. And both of them are in our Spirit Square studio. Joining us by phone is Mary Rose Papandrea, professor of law and associate dean for academic affairs at the UNC School of Law, where she concentrates on constitutional law and media law, among other things. She's also the co-author of the casebook Media and the Law, and has written extensively about student speech rights, the First Amendment rights of public employees, as well as the U.S. Supreme Court and technology. Thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. We're posting on social media a question that should keep you out of trouble while you answer it. Does your workplace have a social media policy? That's one of the things you can comment on as we go through the program at Charlotte Talks on WFAE.org or at WFAE.org or Facebook or on Twitter. The First Amendment, John, deals with freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and the right to peacefully assemble for the address of grievances. It says that Congress shall, I'm going to abbreviate it here, Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. Doesn't that say it all? Do we have to do this hour?
Sure we do, because, I want to say this about the First Amendment. The United States has the most amazing history of having this as a backbone of our Constitution. We encourage, the Supreme Court has said over and over, the First Amendment is designed to encourage wide open, robust, uninhibited speech about matters of public concern. Mm-hmm. We encourage speech that is controversial, that is challenging, and it's often downright ugly.
So we can say whatever we want to say, whenever we want to say it, wherever we want to say it?
The First Amendment is not absolute. No, of course we can't. We know that. Speech is regulated in many ways, but the core is that we protect speech that is opinion speech. It's hard to ever find opinion speech which is not permitted. Speech is regulated in many ways. We can't say false and defamatory things about others without being subject to civil lawsuits for defamation, for example. But by and large, we encourage in this country that limiting speech is the exception. We want people to be able to talk in order to encourage really the marketplace of ideas and hope that the best ideas will be those that get accepted.
But according to Jeanette Cox at the University of Dayton School of Law, the First Amendment not only protects the rights of government workers, it limits that protection, she says, to speech that addresses a matter of public concern. That seems to limit speech, doesn't it? Mary Rose?
Yes, so the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, has developed a patchwork of decisions that set a framework for determining the First Amendment rights of government employees. And I just thought it might be useful for your listeners to know that originally it was regarded that government employees had no real First Amendment rights when it came to their employers' retaliating against them. So there was Oliver Wendell Holmes, a noted jurist, said that government employees may have a constitutional right to talk politics, but they have no constitutional right to be a policeman. And so that was the traditional view. And over time, that view has eroded. So the biggest case, or first big case, is called Pickering. And in the Pickering decision, the court said there's going to be a balancing test. They're going to balance the expressive rights of the employees and the employee's interest in speaking versus the employer's right, the government's interest in suppressing that speech to when it's detrimental to the function and mission of the employer. So that was in the late 1960s. And since that time, the court has chipped away and limited that right. And that brings me to this public concern inquiry that you just were mentioning. So in a later case called Connick, the court said, you know, wait a minute, before you even get to the balancing test, we need to determine as a threshold matter that speech involves a matter of public concern. And if it doesn't, then the employer cannot bring a First Amendment claim against the government employee. The employee cannot bring a First Amendment claim against the government employer. And that is a big restriction on the free speech rights of government employees, particularly in the age of social media, when a lot of stuff, you know, let's be fair, on social media doesn't involve the most pressing matters of our nation.
You have a different quote than I have from Oliver Wendell Holmes. My quote says, he said that an employee may have a constitutional right to talk politics, but he has no constitutional right to be employed. That's a slight difference there. And you kept.
Oh well, that I think some whoever.
Paraphrased it.
It was in the context of a case involving a policeman. So okay. The quote you have probably is just paraphrasing it, but it's the same idea, right? Everyone in this nation has the right to speak freely on a whole range of subjects, just as John was telling you. But the question is, how do those rights exist, or what's the scope of those rights when the government, when you're working for the government, and the government as an employer has an interest, just as any employer does, in making sure that they can function and they can serve the public. And so there's a real tension here. What should the scope of the rights be for government employees?
Jonathan Crotty, you deal with employers and employees all the time. That's one of your areas of expertise at Parker Poe. She keeps talking about government employees and their rights to free speech. What about private workers who don't work for government installations? They work for private employers. Is there a different standard?
There's a very different standard, and the rules are different for private employers. There's a real misbelief a lot of times on the part of employees who work in the private sector that the First Amendment protects them from their employer taking action against them with regard to their speech. And the First Amendment simply does not apply to the private sector. It prevents the government from interfering with your speech rights, but it has no application to employers in the private sector. There's some other legal protections that the employees may have, but in general, an employee can't sue an employer for a violation, a private employer for a violation of the First Amendment, because the employer takes action against them based on their exercise of what they believe are free speech rights.
But now, wait a minute. If I'm on my Facebook account, or I'm saying something, I'm sending something out on Twitter at 9:30 at night, and I'm at home sitting in my jammies, why does my employer have a right to tell me what I can or cannot post? If I'm not talking about my employer, if I'm not criticizing my employer or fellow employees or company policies, if I'm talking about something political, if I'm making a post that may be defamatory to somebody but has nothing to do with my employer, why can they take action against me?
It's because North Carolina and South Carolina are what we call employment at will states, which means that the employer has the right to terminate an employee or take disciplinary action against them for any reason or no reason at all, as long as it's not an illegal reason.
So is free speech an illusion?
Of course not. Free speech is not an illusion, but Jonathan makes the great point. And you touched on the language of the First Amendment when you started. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. By the way, I think everybody should know all that by heart. I think it's a good thing to know.
But Dow Chemical and Bank of America and NBC and others can make their own rules about free speech.
That's right, in the sense that the First Amendment does not prohibit private employers or private folks from restricting speech. It does keep the federal government, the state government, your city government, governmental institutions.
I was actually surprised to learn two things yesterday, that some states, including California, Colorado, Montana, New York, and North Dakota, have statutes limiting speech-related terminations on the basis of off-duty hour activity. But 31 states, including our two, North and South Carolina, do not. There are no protections, correct?
That's correct. Now, there are federal legal protections for employees going on social media or otherwise and complaining or talking amongst themselves about the terms and conditions of their employment, their wages, safety issues, things having to do with their work itself. It's protected under federal statute that's separate from the First Amendment. But in general, North Carolina, South Carolina, there is no government protection against a termination based on speech.
Social media posts can range from blogs of thousands of words to whole books. I mean, you can publish your whole book on social media, one would think, to short tweets, to pictures on Instagram. All of these things are very different. But how, unless you're inciting someone to riot, how is that different from having a conversation over the water cooler at work with a fellow worker or having a conversation over the backyard fence or at a barbecue with your neighbor? It's all speech. You're saying this, if you're saying exactly the same thing, what's the difference?
Can I take a stab at that?
Sure.
Sure. So, I mean, the difference is that now it's much more visible to the employers and to the public when someone says something inflammatory that online. So, you know, when someone's talking to a neighbor over the backyard fence, it's unlikely that the neighbor's going to repeat it, or even if the neighbor does, the neighbor has no physical proof of what was said. When you're talking about Facebook posts and other forms of social media, people write things. Maybe they don't realize that a lot of people can see that, but it's very common that maybe one of the readers was in a part of your network, or maybe someone who just happens upon it finds it offensive, brings it to the attention of the employer, and that's where the trouble ensues. So I don't think that people have just started saying things that are offensive to their employers. I just think employers are much more likely to find out about those things.
But the National Labor Relations Board, they say they view social media as the modern-day water cooler, their words. And they've ruled in favor of employees in some egregious situations, I'm told, including employees who made vulgar or profane posts involving their employers or their supervisors. So where do the courts come down on this? What does case law say?
Well, again, you're talking about employees who have posted information that talks about the terms and conditions of their employment. They're complaining about their supervisor. They're complaining about customers. They're complaining about how much they're getting paid. Under the National Labor Relations Act, that is considered protected, concerted activity. And you're right. The NLRB considers that no different than employees getting together over the water cooler and talking about it. Even though, as Mary Rose pointed out, many more people can see it when it's online.
But I'm getting mixed messages here. On the one hand, I'm hearing you people say, don't do this because you have no protections, particularly in North and South Carolina and 29 other states. On the other hand, the National Labor Relations Board says it's water cooler conversation. They can't go after you and we'll defend you. We have to come back. Well, we'll get an answer about that because it seems to be we're talking at cross purposes here. So let's get an answer to that when we come back from the break. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Corkscrew Wine Shop and Bar, located at Burkdale Village in Lake Norman, offering wines from around the world, live local music, and craft beer on tap. Relax, uncork, unwind. The Corkscrew. Details at thescrewcrew.com. Well, the recent shootings of two African-American men by police, both in Louisiana and Minnesota, combined with shootings of police by an African-American man in Dallas, have put the spotlight back on the state of relations between law enforcement and the black community. Those events hit home here because of a similar incident in 2013, and the trial of that police officer ended in a hung jury. Since then, CMPD has been trying to rebuild trust, and we'll find out where all of this stands here at home on this program tomorrow at 9. Mm-hmm.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, President Obama and former President George W. Bush go to Dallas to call for healing. The presidential candidates offer reactions as well. Political leadership in a time of deep national divisions.
The Diane Rehm Show following Charlotte Talks from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE, listener-funded public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about free speech in the age of social media, what you can and cannot say, what protections you have or do not have in this case. With John Buchan, who's an attorney with Essex Richards, who deals with some of this and radio and television and newspapers. He's also the chair of the WFAE Board of Directors. Jonathan Crotty is an attorney and a partner with Parker Poe. And Mary Rose Papandrea joins us from UNC Chapel Hill School of Law. She's a professor of law there and the associate dean for academic affairs and co-author of Media and the Law. So I'm in this conversation so far, what I've heard is that you have to be very careful what you say in social media posts because you don't have, at least in North and South Carolina, any protections from your employer. If they don't like what you say, they can terminate your employment. On the other hand, you got the National Labor Relations Board saying what you say is water cooler conversation. It's protected and we'll protect you. I don't understand.
Well, first, your first point is actually not correct because if you're talking about private employers, That is true, but of course, with we were talking initially about government employees, and so the First Amendment does have some limits on what the government can do. And then, with respect to the NLRB and the National Labor Relations Board, I mean, the idea is that with very specific types of speech, as Jonathan was saying, you know, relating to working conditions, terms and salary, and that sort of thing, those are protected, but a lot of the cases that we see around the country, you know, here in North Carolina, around the country, are where police officers or fires make racially disparaging comments, or teachers post pictures on social media where they're engaged in drinking, or they're posed in a bikini or some other revealing outfit, and parents don't like having teachers who drink, I guess, and flaunt their sexuality. So, you know, those don't by any means fall under the National Labor Relations Board exception. So it's a very limited exception.
So there are different protections for public government workers and private employees for private companies. Is it legal for employers to take action against someone who posts something that's negative about the company or a fellow employee, even if that comment is true?
So are we talking about a government employee?
No, let's talk about private people, because most people who are listening probably listen to us who work for private employers.
Jonathan, why don't you talk about that?
For private employers, if the comment is made in the context of a discussion among employees that criticizes the employer, whether it's true or not, and does it in the context of complaining about the terms of employment, it is protected by the NLRB. If it's just a general complaint, or it's harassing an employee or disclosing a trade secret, it's probably not protected. So Mary Rose is right. The protection is limited to when employees are saying, I don't like something about the way I'm being treated at work.
What if your comment has nothing to do with the company you work for? What if it's purely a political comment? You've taken a position in support of or against a particular political candidate or a particular controversial issue, and you post about that on Twitter or Facebook, and your employer has a different stance or would prefer that you take no stance at all?
Well, first of all, most private employers either don't care about their employees' political views or don't have the time to try to police them. In some circumstances, however, when the view is seen as so extreme or incompatible with that employer's public face or image or the way that they do business, yes, a private employer has the right to take disciplinary action against that employee because they disagree with the political opinion that's being expressed by the employee.
So in the case of let's just bring it to radio and television. Just suppose, this would never happen, John, I assure you, but just suppose I want to post something on Facebook or Twitter in support of a political candidate. Can I do that? And still work here?
I don't think you can, because I think you're very specific policies, as most any news organization would have, against their employees.
Would
being
that be
involved.
True at JCPenney?
Well, I think just as Jonathan said, I think it depends on if the employer takes issue with it, and they've reserved that in their policy manual.
Not in the manual? What if it's something that a manager decides, I don't really agree with that, and I don't want to work with this person, and this is a good way to get rid of them?
It's probably a really bad human resource practice for the employer to engage in, but is it illegal? Probably not.
Mary Rose, you wrote a publication called The Free Speech Rights of Off-Duty Government Employees in 2010, and off-duty is in quotation marks. Is that to say that when you work for the government, you're never off-duty?
Well, you know, there could be with social media and any online communications, sometimes people are posting things when they're at work, so they're technically on duty, but they may not be actually performing their work function. So that's why it was in quotation marks. It's a little bit trickier when you're talking about the internet, because people aren't always using it after work hours. That article was focusing mostly on speech that doesn't relate to workplace conditions, as Jonathan was just talking about, but more speech that involves things, relating to the employee's private life. So things that, like I was saying, maybe it could be about vacations. There was a teacher who got in trouble once for posting a picture of herself at a beer garden in Germany. There have been teachers who have gotten in trouble for posting those bikini shots or being involved in pornography. There's a police officer who had a sexually explicit video of himself and a police officer stripping off the uniform. These things don't involve any statements about the workplace in any meaningful way. And so the question is, should any of the things I've just mentioned, and there are loads of other examples I can give you, should those kinds of activities get protection under the First Amendment? And the one of the main points of that article was that given that we have this threshold question that there's protection only if the speech involves a matter of public concern, a lot of this activity, a lot of this expressive activity will not get protection, at least as some courts have interpreted around the country. So it means that there's a lot of exposure for government employees who are using social media in a way that most Americans do and expect, not to get in trouble for, but they can end up getting fired or suffer some other adverse employment consequence.
Social media has kind of spread like wildfire. Maybe it took everybody by surprise. I think we started developing rules for conduct as it went along, and I think a lot of people did not understand exactly what they were doing when they were putting pictures or comments on social media. They just thought it was going up for their friends and family to see and realized in the back of their minds that it was a public space, but really didn't take that in and realize that they're broadcasting this stuff to the world at large. Employers also probably didn't know exactly what the impact of this was going to be. Is this a situation where technology has moved much quicker than policy and or law can keep up with?
Yeah, that's a point I'd love to talk about a little bit. right now, at least as of 2015, I think Facebook had over 1.4 billion users. I don't think anybody anticipated that 15 years ago. One area that is where the law has not changed, but I think it is news to a lot of folks who use social media, is that the law of defamation, in large part, has not changed. I think people often make comments in the Twitter sphere, on Facebook, even in emails, that are less judicious than they might make if they were writing just a letter to someone. I think the conversation is often more heated in the social media context. What has not changed is the fact that if you publish a statement about someone else and that statement is false and it harms the reputation of that person, you as the speaker or the publisher of that comment can very much end up being subject to civil libel litigation.
So libel laws, slander laws, still apply.
Right. And I think you know, as Adele might say, rumor has it. A lot of the Twittersphere is about rumor has it that. And I would encourage people to be careful about that.
People are frequently more angry or express things in more coarse terms in social media than perhaps we've been accustomed to in letters to the editor. Is that because letters to the editor are edited or screened, and these just go out there because you write them and they're posted?
Right.
Bang.
Right. Well, here's another good point to touch on there. You know, in 1995, Congress realized through some good lobbying by folks like Yahoo and Prodigy, if you can remember Prodigy.
I can remember Prodigy.
They were realizing that when people posted things to their bulletin boards, that they might be subject under the traditional laws of defamation to lawsuits against them as well as the person who made the post itself. Congress passed something called the Communications Decency Act, and part of that protected Internet service providers like Facebook or like the websites of WFAE or the Charlotte Observer or WBTV. They have immunity if they have not created the content that gets posted to their website.
So just having the platform does not put them in jeopardy.
That's right. And here's the real interesting thing. If you take a daily newspaper, if you were to send a letter to the editor that had a false and defamatory statement in it, right, that person that you wrote about could sue you and they could sue the newspaper. But if it's on their website, the Communications Decency Act protects the owner of that website.
Why? Simply because the flow of contributions to those websites is so immense that it cannot be policed as well as the newspaper can?
That's exactly right.
That's why. Aside from that, how is talking about posting a photograph of whatever it may be in social media any different from calling in to a radio talk show in the 1960s or writing an article for a magazine in the 1970s or writing a book in the 1950s that expresses a point of view that your employer may not agree with? How is it or is it different in social media?
It's there forever. Once you post it online, it's very difficult to make it go away as you could with a letter to the editor or something like that. It just tends to be there for a long period of time, and there are many more opportunities and many more people who see it who can bring it to the employer's
attention. But is the right to publish protected by the First Amendment?
Sure.
So isn't posting on a social media site where you're putting text on a page and that page is there forever, as Jonathan says, isn't that publishing? Isn't that the same thing?
Well, it's protected, but it's also subject. Remember, the right to publish also can bring with it consequences, and the ones I was just talking about are the defamatory kind of speech, which is subject to consequences. You have a right to put it up there, but you can also be punished if it's speech that is not protected.
There's plenty of unprotected speech. Why does there seem to be a disconnect? Why do people have trouble with this concept? Because, yes, you're right. We can say anything we want to say, but there are consequences for what we say. Why do people not understand that when it comes to social media? Do they really think that they're sitting in their home office or on the sofa with their laptop pounding away at a post on Facebook and that's where they are and that's what that space is to them, their private living space? They don't see that it's going out to the world? Mary Rose?
There have been some studies where that have demonstrated that people who post on social media are imagining a universe of 5 to 10 individuals who are going to receive that message, even if those very same people have hundreds of followers.
Well, that's part of the thing. You want to have hundreds of you want to have hundreds and thousands of followers, and if you're a tweeter, you want to be retweeted. So why don't they see the reality of that?
Well, it is possible to get in trouble for things on Twitter, but most of the cases I've heard about involve Facebook, where I think this phenomena is more demonstrated.
But
idea is that this is your own private social network, and you're just talking to your friends and family, and you're not realizing that whatever you post, it could be a racist joke or something else that is offensive, so it might find its way to people you're not intending. So I always tell people, my friends, my family, everyone, because I've studied this issue so much, that if you ever post something online, anything, anywhere, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, what have you, imagine that it's on the front page of the Charlotte Observer. And would you be happy with that? Now, that can have a chilling effect, as we say in the First Amendment, a chilling effect on what you say. But the reality is, as Jonathan and John were saying, the things that you put online have a life of their own. They can find their way to unintended recipients. They can live on forever, and they can really cause you a lot of problems. So I think the wisest course is to be very careful about what you put down online.
And not everything that you put online is as complicated as writing a sentence or a blog. It can be simply going on Facebook and liking something. John emails, how does free speech apply to likes on Facebook? In the employment universe, how could that impact you?
Well, again, if it's a private employer, it wouldn't have any implication. However, there was a new NLRB case that said that an employee that was liking on Facebook the comment of another employee talking about something going on at work was a protected behavior under the National Labor Relations Act. So the act of just liking was deemed protected concerted activity.
In all situations?
If they're talking about the terms and conditions of employment.
But if you're talking about a political comment or a racist comment,
that would not be protected. Correct.
Only conversations or likes with regard to employment are protected.
Correct.
And that's in the public and the private sector?
That's in the private sector.
In the private sector. What about in the government universe?
I'll let Mary Rose address the protections. The National Labor Relations Board doesn't cover private or public sector
employees. Sectors. Mary Rose?
Well, if you're talking about liking a racist joke or something like that, the first question would be, is that a matter of public concern? And the courts are split on that question, because is it sufficiently weighty to be a matter of public concern? Some courts would say, you know, it is involved race relations, and so at bottom it does have a connection to matters of public concern. Other courts would say it's just a joke, it's not weighty enough. So that's the threshold inquiry. And then after that, the question is this balancing test of the employer's interest in that expressive activity versus the employee's interest in the expressive activity versus the government's interest in restricting that speech. And that's where a lot of very interesting stuff takes place in the judicial analysis. How do you figure out, how do you balance apples and oranges? How do you balance the employee's interest in speaking versus the government's interest in not having that person speak? They're not commensurate values. And employers like to talk about the public being outraged. This is what we call in First Amendment law the heckler's veto. Usually the heckler's veto is not tolerated as a justification for silencing people. But in this context, courts have frequently around the country credited the government's concern that the public is outraged and that will undermine the ability of the government to perform, and said that is sufficient to outweigh whatever interest the employee might have had in that expression.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about how big a deal this is in terms of legal cases and in terms of employers monitoring the transmissions or the postings of their employees and whether there's actually a mechanism in place in most places to monitor this. We're going to come right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Duke Energy, investing in local communities by funding science, technology, engineering, and literacy programs in schools. More information at duke-energy.com/community. President Obama and former President George W. Bush will be in Dallas today to call for healing. The presidential candidates offer reactions as well. And on the Diane Rehm Show coming up at 20 minutes to 10 o'clock, they'll talk about political leadership in a time of deep national division. That's all upcoming. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can do that right now. Email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter @CharlotteTalks. And we're coming right back.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
Around 9 p.m. last night, as protesters were approaching City Hall in Dallas, shots rang out through the air.
It's your community. We help you understand it.
Charlotte-Mecklenburg leaders began talking about a major renovation of the stadium site, and now a proposal is on the table.
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about free speech in the age of social media. John Buchan is with us, an attorney with Essex Richards and the chair of the WFAE board. Jonathan Crotty, attorney and partner at Parker Poe, who deals with this with employer-employee relations. And Mary Rose Papandrea, professor of law and associate dean for academic affairs at the UNC School of Law and co-author of Media and the Law. Jonathan, how big a problem is this, or how big an infrastructure do businesses have to handle this? Is somebody keeping a tally, for instance, of cases in which employees or employers have told employees to stop posting certain things, or the number of businesses that have defined policies on this?
Yeah, I think that most companies have social media policies now or moving in that direction. However, I don't think that most companies, at least in my experience, are out there actively monitoring their employees' social media posts. They just don't have the time or interest generally.
What about customers' social media posts? I know that airlines and other organizations monitor what passengers are saying about their service. Are you able to say whatever you want to say as a passenger on an airline?
I think subject
with impunity?
Subject to John's comments about defamation, in general, I think that would be the major limit on it, John, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that's right.
So as a customer, you're in the clear unless you say something that's simply untrue or defamatory.
Yes. I mean,
yeah,
I think
that – it could be a true threat, or, you know, there are other categories of speech that fall outside of the First Amendment, but – yeah, most likely would be it's something defamatory.
But if my employer tells me that I cannot, what I can and cannot say in social media, are they not muzzling me? Are they not abridging my right to talk, to say things freely in America?
Well, remember, the First Amendment, as we've talked about before, has to do with government restrictions on speech. So those protections, the First Amendment protections, or even state constitutional protections about speech, like North Carolina has, those go largely out the window when you're talking about private
employees. Has this been a big problem for businesses, for governments to deal with, or is this just something that happens every once in a while?
Well, it is a problem, especially for businesses that have a very public consumer face, companies that spend a lot of money on their brand, on their public image, and view it as being subject to being damaged internally by one of their employees. So it is a big deal for them. For companies that don't have as much visibility to the public, maybe it's not that big of a deal for them. But it is something, at least that in my practice, we're regularly seeing come up.
Should you expect, if you post something in social media as an employee, should you expect that your employer may have something to say about it? Or would you be surprised that they had something to say about it?
Well, as I said earlier, I think you should always be cautious. If you're concerned at all, if you're aware of the case law here where the protections are so tenuous for employees, I think that you should always assume that that could happen. But the reality is it doesn't. As Jonathan was saying earlier, most employers are not monitoring, even government employees, private employers are not monitoring the social media accounts. What typically will happen is that somebody out there, it could be anonymously even, will bring whatever this offensive post is to the attention of the employer, or very frequently to the media. And so suddenly there's something on the radio, or there's something on the local 6 o'clock news talking about, can you believe that this police officer made this racist joke or something like that? And then it becomes a public relations nightmare that the police department has to deal with,
right,
even if it otherwise was not looking for it and would not have otherwise known about it.
Because a lot of people post blithely unaware that their posts are there forever and that they're going to anybody in the world who has access to Facebook or Twitter or whatever, they're unaware that this is becoming part of what we used to refer to in grade school as our permanent record. And in this case, it really is, unlike grade school, a permanent record. Lots of employers check your permanent record. They check your social media history before they hire you. Should that be a consideration as you post away?
Absolutely. I think the majority of employers do at least Google an applicant for employment and see what's out there. So, and I have three millennial kids, and I tell them all the time, be careful about what you're posting because later on it could come back and hurt you in terms of things like employment.
Like what?
Pictures of you out partying on the weekend, engaging in behavior that an employer might find unprofessional or incompatible with the way that that they do business.
Can employers ask you legally for your login information so they can dig deeply into your Facebook profiles, et cetera?
Generally, no. There are protections in place, and there are growing protections that would keep an employer from requiring as a condition of employment that you turn over those passwords.
So a prospective employer cannot ask. But if they ask, can they not ask and you can refuse? Or is the prohibition against asking?
It's a really developing area of the law, and it's kind of state by state at this point in time. But in general, the trend is toward prohibiting employers from requiring that employees or applicants turn over their passwords for their protected social
media. But if they don't require it, they've simply asked for it, and you say, I'd rather not give you that information, and then they don't hire you, can you blame them? I mean, can you take them to court because they didn't hire you because you refused to turn over your information?
I'd advise an employer not to do that, that would be a bad practice, and it would put them at risk for a potential failure to hire claim.
What are employers doing to monitor social media activities of employees?
Again, as Mary Rose said, I don't think that they are, in general, that they have a program in place to do that. I think it is a situation where it's information that's brought to their attention.
Given the massive amount of information that is being posted on social media platforms by individuals across the world, and given the permanent nature of what is being posted, it is always there. Do we need laws on the books to protect individuals who are not lawyers, who don't have a phalanx of lawyers to assist them? Because one mistake could do serious damage to your life or career. Do we need laws to protect people from themselves? Nobody wants to answer that question.
I guess it depends on your point of view of how legitimate it is for the employers to be worried about what people are saying online. I think that it very much varies on what position the employer holds. So I think there's much more validity to an employer's concern. The government, you know, for example, worried about police officers, particularly in this day and age with this current climate, you know, police officers posting racist comments. There's a case out of New York where police officers had a float in a parade where they appeared in blackface and other offensive costumes. In those situations, I'm not sure that anyone would really advocate for laws that protected police officers in those contexts. On the other hand, you have government employees whose functions don't really involve any discretion, don't involve any interaction even with the public. And it's not clear in those situations that the employer really does have a very legitimate interest in repressing or restricting that speech. So I think people come at this from very different directions. I tend to be more concerned, as your question suggested, about the free speech rights of government employees. But I'm sure other people like Jonathan's clients would like to have greater leeway to restrict speech that reflects poorly on the company as a whole.
And part of this is also a damned if you do, damned if you don't thing, because you have to be careful what you post in your social media postings if you want to keep your permanent record squeaky clean and make yourself not a target by an employer or a prospective employer. But some employers want you to have, they check your social media accounts. They want you to have them. If you don't have them, the points are taken away. So what do? You got to have these accounts. You got to participate in the world of social media, or you don't get a job in some cases.
Yeah, that's a great point, because we tell employers all the time, don't put policies in place that are so restrictive that they interfere with your employees' really productive and profitable use of social media. And we see some employees that are doing great things in terms of Twitter and Facebook and keeping their customers appraised of what's going on. So, again, I don't think that employers are really nitpicking this stuff. I think it's the egregious comments. It's the stuff that's really over the top that prompt them to take action. So I don't think that employees need to be paranoid about every expression of personal opinion they put online. They just need to be judicious about thinking about what the impact of that would be.
Employers who have taken action, I understand, against employees for their postings have done so because they feel that those employees have damaged the company's brand. Does that stand the legal test? And do you think it's true? Does the public notice or care that one individual employee has said something that maybe reflects negatively on the brand? Those people are not the president of the company or the chairman of the board. They're just a guy who comes to work 9 to 5.
Yeah, no, it's a real concern. I mean, this is what I've seen in my study of the cases around the country, that the government employers will argue that their ability to serve the public is dramatically undermined by whatever offensive speech is at issue. And it's largely the result of whether there's public outrage. And like I was saying, you have these stories that go on the 6 o'clock news or otherwise circulated in the media, and the public gets very upset, or at least a segment of the public does. And you could, as an employer, you could try to say, we understand you're upset, but we also respect people's First Amendment rights, and we're not going to take action against this employee. But there is that real concern. Like, how do you deal with the public relations fallout? And for many employers, public and private, it just seems easier to take swift action against the employee rather than wade into those murky waters with a public that's increasingly hostile.
And Jonathan Crotty, you talked about companies developing policies so that their employees are clear about what the expectations are of their use of social media. Are there similar company policies that govern personal conduct outside of the office, not on social media? For instance, if I leave this studio and go to a bar and decide to get myself drunk and cause a scene in a bar, are there policies for that?
For some employers, yes. For most employers, probably not. But I think employers view social media as new enough and perhaps different enough where they believe they need to put employees on notice as to what their specific expectations are because, again, people don't have any experience with this. I think most people would know that if they went to a bar and got drunk and acted obnoxiously, it could have a negative impact on their employment.
Unions also used to protect employees. There are protections for government workers in social media under the First Amendment, but unions used to step in and protect employees from a lot of different things. The influence of unions has declined precipitously over the years. Is that part of the problem here?
Well, I mean, it's certainly part of the issue here. If you're in a unionized environment or unionized employer, the social media policies, the practices of the employer can be something that can be a matter of dispute between the union who's protecting the employee and the employer.
This is publishing and broadcasting. Social media is publishing and broadcasting, and I don't think people realize that. And I think broadcasters, those of us who have done this for a long time, came up through the ranks at time of the Fairness Doctrine and all this other stuff that's gone by the wayside. But we have in our heads, most of us, an editor. We know what we can and cannot say. We know what the parameters are. Something is happening in the world now where everything is on live. We saw it in the incidents in Minnesota where the police officer came up and shot somebody in a car, and his girlfriend broadcast the aftermath of that shooting live on Facebook. How big a concern should that be for the person broadcasting it live or shooting video of interactions of police with individuals and then posting that video? How big a concern should that be?
Yeah. Let me take that in just a slightly different direction because I think this is really important. As recently as 5 years ago when there were many confrontations between police and news reporters and camera videographers who would show up at an accident scene or a crime scene. And we had cases all across the country of reporters, for example, being charged with crimes, obstruction of justice, for refusing to stop filming police. And these cases have worked their way through the courts, and the courts have, in the last 5 years in particular, found that there is a First Amendment right to videotape in a public place if you're not obstructing what police are doing. But it's taken a little while for this idea that not just news folks, but anybody with a smartphone can do that. Charlotte police, by the way, have been really good about this. The policies by the Charlotte police are very strong. They train their recruits in their initial training very specifically that it is okay for other people to be videotaping you, whether it's news folks or whether it's individuals, whether it's spectators, as long as they're not interfering. And they also tell them, if you think they're interfering, tell them to step away
somewhere. If you post that material, right, you are also revealing the identity of people who may or may not be guilty.
Sure, but you're doing that from something that's in a very public place. You know, anybody who's standing there would also have the ability to witness that. And therefore, you're videotaping that and you're sharing it. And in fact, Chief Monroe, when he was still chief about a year ago, mm-hmm, encouraged community members, if they saw police in an activity, to go ahead and film it. He encouraged them to do that. There was an interview in Charlotte Magazine where he was quoted just that way. I think police see this as an appropriate thing.
Okay. Jeffrey tweets, just be smart. I worked, he says, for the Boy Scouts, and when I posted about my liberal views, only my friends saw it, not colleagues. So is that a good rule of thumb, Jonathan? Just be judicious about what you say.
And password protect your social media accounts.
That comes from a man who has experience with employers and employees. Jonathan Crotty, an attorney and a partner with Parker Poe. Mary Rose Papandrea, professor of law and associate dean for academic affairs at the UNC School of Law. And John Buchan, attorney with Essex Richards, who deals with some of this, and WFAE's chairman of the board, not to be confused with Frank Sinatra. Thank you all for the hour.